This is the Florida Spectacular Podcast with your hosts, Kathy Silustri and Rick Kilby. Keep up with Kathy at greatfloridaroadtrip.com and on Twitter and Instagram at Kathy Silustri. Find Rick at rickkilby.com. Now, discover a Florida you never knew existed.
Hello, Rick. I would say good morning, but it's not good morning. It's good afternoon.
Different vibe today. I'm drinking tea instead of coffee, so we'll see. I switched to tea at midday, and we'll see how it goes.
I have my big old Yeti of water. Yeti doesn't get paid or doesn't pay us. I just like my Yeti. And I am waiting for something in the air fryer to beep, which is not healthy at all, but I'm going to let it go. I had a time crunch afternoon. I didn't have lunch. Usually I'm eating my bagel for breakfast. But today I'm trying to get contacts, and it's been this back and forth process. And because I have progressive lenses, they have to kind of fine tune it. So they gave me samples to take home last night, and it didn't work. And I tried it again today, and they're just not the right prescription. And I didn't think I got them both out, and I was starting to panic because I'm like, I can't leave this contact in my eye and I can't feel it. So I had to slam down to the eye doctor, and I'm like, I think I have a contact in my eye. And they said, we don't think it's there. So instead of eating lunch, I got to drive to the eye doctor and back. So yes, it is a very different vibe, but you have hunted up a guest for us today. You went out foraging in the wilds of Florida, and you came back with a guest. So good score.
Yeah. I'm excited because I was at the gift shop at the Fountain of Youth, and I go there every time because it's one of my favorite gift shops in St. Augustine because it has really cool, kitschy stuff. And they have my book, which I also love, and it's one of my favorite places. And I found this book called Luella, about the life and times of Luella Day McConnell. And I don't know, when you research, do you get obsessed with the topic when you go down the rabbit
hole?
Yeah.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I think that's probably the best way to say it. I have found myself chasing down the most bizarre details that, like, a week later I come back and go, wait a minute, this isn't germane to the story.
No, it's the danger of the rabbit hole.
Because it's a beautiful rabbit hole. It's decorated with all sorts of Florida fun facts.
Yeah, but sometimes you end up, you know, far away from your goal, and you've found all this minutia that doesn't help you get closer to your goal at all. That's the danger of it.
But it does make me very good at Jeopardy.
Yeah, but how many good minutia type questions are there on Jeopardy that are like really deep Florida-centric questions? It's usually like, who discovered Florida in 1513? You know, something like that.
And then that's not true. But more to the point, Rick, how often have I been on Jeopardy? And the answer is never. So really, that's you're right. You make a good point. So what rabbit hole were you down? I feel like this is leading somewhere.
Luella McConnell, one of her many names, supposedly was the one who created the Fountain of Youth attraction in St. Augustine. And the more I researched her story, the more I thought, this is one of the most interesting people I've ever heard about. In, you know, amongst all the myriad interesting people in Florida, she's fascinating. And
that
it's not just a Florida
broad statement.
Well, wait. So when I found this book, I couldn't believe, because I hit roadblocks and I had to give it up. And our guest today, Brandy Carlisle, found stuff about Luella that I never found. And I was just, it made the story deeper and richer and exciting. So I want to ask first, Brandy, how did you find Luella Day?
Actually, I work at the Fountain of Youth, and I am not representing them in any way whatsoever. But that is where I first heard her story. And I was fascinated with it, because the more I heard about her, you know, I like to do research, and I'm a native St. Augustine. And for me to not ever have heard from her about her, I was surprised. So I did some Googling, and of course her story, that rabbit hole you guys are talking about, it definitely led me down. And the next thing I know, I saw her as Luella Day Underhill. And I was able to connect her with her first husband through her letters. Dr. Roger Smith at Flagler, he's done some stuff on her that I think is online somewhere. But they were talking about, you know, her being a doctor and Underhill. So I started with the ancestry, and I found her in Indiana, in Fort Wayne, Indiana, where the papers claim she was a local. But the main thing was that, you know, in St. Augustine, everybody likes to call her a Barnum and Bailey type of character, a shyster, you know, and she was very flamboyant, you know. Yeah,
unlike all the other Florida boosters who were just distinguished citizens.
Especially the ones that land in St. Aug, you know, and she was just, you know, she was very flamboyant, but she was who she said she was, which was bigger than life.
Yeah.
I mean, when I found out that, the first thing when they claimed she wasn't a real doctor, that got me really going. And I was like, well, why would she say that? And then I found that she actually was. And I found her certificate from Indiana, where she graduated in 1886. And from there, I was like, well, there's more to her. So, yeah, that's what really started it. And I did find out she was a doctor, and there were a lot of people to research. If I could show you my notebook here that I keep, it's pretty thick.
and a lot of those people are the same person, because Luella kept changing her name.
True.
Why did she do that?
Oh, well, that's a big question.
Oh, she was a scammer. When you read the book, I tried not to put her in any kind of angel wings, because Luella most definitely could run a good scam.
Yeah.
And her and Ed McConnell,
again,
they both
so ran. Unlike the men who boosted Florida.
Yeah.
I don't want us to harsh on this lady for living in a man's world, but okay.
Absolutely. Oh, and she took it by the reins, and you can see, that's where her medical profession really comes in, because she mixed and mingled with a lot of the ladies who were actually powerful. I would figure she had plenty of interactions with Blanche Travis, who was one of the ladies who started, you know, the West King Street area with the bordellos. Luella was a doctor to the ladies of the night in Chicago for quite some time. So, you know, I don't see why she wouldn't do it here. In St. Augustine, she's right in between two of the largest bordello sections in this area. You know, here in Jacksonville, you got Cora Crane running the Ashley Street bordello section. And there in St. Augustine, you've got Blanche Travis. So here's Luella right in the middle. So yeah, oh yeah, she was probably, you know, in the middle of all kinds of things. Absolutely no angel, but definitely genuine.
Yeah, I one of the sense I got from your book is you didn't try and sugarcoat her story at all. But it's you know, she's so kind of elusive that it's hard. Like, I don't know what was in her heart. I really don't know what was in her heart.
It is hard to say. Yeah, it is hard to say. It's hard to tell.
And you took a romantic view that some places. Now, did you work with Kit Keating at all at the Fountain of Youth?
No. I have heard his name, and recently he was in conversation, but no, I did not. I do know he was out there, though.
He believed that when she died in that car crash, that the woman she was in the car crash with was her lover.
Oh, and it's possible. Yeah.
With Luella, anything is possible.
Absolutely. I mean, I can say through all this research, you know, she really is, with her, anything is possible. I was really intrigued by your idea about McCullough. And I've actually looked into that since we messaged about that. And she is incredibly interesting. It really parallels. And, you know, at the end of the book, I say, you know, my best wish was that her and Luella, you know, her and Ed rode off into the sunset. She faked her death. And, you know, this lady would have been about the right age. She died at like 74.
and if she didn't die, she could have reinvented herself as a psychic. So
oh,
we should
absolutely
give somebody like a basic overview of her life. Like, she started in the Midwest, became a doctor, all that kind of stuff, and take it up through the Yukon into St. Augustine.
Yeah. Yeah. And quite a lot of times she had, you know, her, I believe, in at least two different situations, I think her motivation was, you know, people trying to offer. I mean, quite, you know, quite honestly, you know, in Chicago, she really got into it because in the late 1890s, you know, the Harrison Police Station was called the Bucket of Blood. The cops there were pretty much, you know, on the take a lot of times. And Luella literally declared war on these guys over the Bordello section.
So she started in Indiana, right?
Right. And she her hospital was burned there, yeah.
And she got run out of Indiana and turns up in Chicago next, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. From Fort Wayne to Chicago.
And then, so this is still in the 19th century. This is the late 1800s, right?
Right. Right.
And so she's involved with a lot of, what kind of stuff was she involved with in Chicago?
Now, Chicago, she starts, it's interesting because in the directories, and that's a lot, I use a lot of the census and directory pages from my research, and you find her in the upper class area of Chicago with a spa for like upper class ladies. And at the same time, she's got an office down on Clark Street, which Clark Street was the levee district, which is the Bordello area. And so she's kind of working both worlds, it looks like there. Her husband, Joseph, I think this was right in the middle, but he's out in Mexico. He's an engineer. So she's running both worlds. And she gets involved with the Women's Christians Temperance Unit when the health department is created in Chicago. And what puts her in the area of that is the Bordello section, because they want doctors, women's or her women's alliance, who can go in these buildings and do the things that they don't want. You know, you've got gangsters in there. They're not letting city officials in. And so the doctor can go in with her women and tell them, hey, you know, maybe you dispose of things better and be a little cleaner and da da da.
Probably performing illegal abortions is one of the things I figured she was probably doing.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Without doubt, because she was in the papers for doing that at Fort Wayne.
Yeah.
That's why she got ran out of it. She made the papers for that on two different occasions. You have one, the first one, which coincides with her first hospital getting burned down. So you can pretty much figure that that's what's going on. She did it for a wealthy woman who ended up passing away. And in the newspaper article, the lady actually accused Luella of killing her for $10.
I remember reading that in your book. Yeah. And it's like, wow. So basically, and she was involved in a litigious activity her whole life. She was always getting drugged into court. And is that why she escaped? She went to California first before going up to the Yukon, right?
Now that is kind of in the air. I have found her in California, which is why I like your McCullough lady so much.
Yeah.
Because Ed McConnell lived in San Diego, California. He had California roots. When he was 71 years old, I find him in a directory living with his sister and brother in San Diego.
In San Diego or San Francisco? I thought he was a San Francisco guy.
It could have been San Francisco. Yeah. So there's a California connection. There's also an Oregon connection. Like up in the Midwest, she had a big Oregon connection. Ed had two or three different addresses up there. So yeah, there's definitely a connection. Now, in between Chicago and I believe she went straight from Chicago to the Klondike.
So for our listeners, she leaves Chicago. There's the big gold rush in Alaska, and she's part of that. You know, she's right there. This Ed McDonald or Ed McConnell, she ends up marrying, and I think he's a flim-flammer too. And And is it Dawson City where they end up?
Yeah, it's Dawson City. And, you know, it's amazing how fast she moves.
Yeah.
Because within like 3 years of her hitting Dawson City, she's got a hotel. She's got a store. She's got her man, who's one of the richest men in Dawson City. Ed McConnell is the one who hooked her up with the Melbourne Hotel. And so she ends up turning it into her own place, which there you find something interesting too, because Luella has all these interactions with bordellos and the ladies of the night. But when she gets the hotel from Ed, there's plenty of ladies up on the third floor that Luella kicks out. And she does it by turning the heat off on them. And, you know, it's pretty cruel. And it's like
in Alaska.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, lady, come on. You know, I mean, this was something you made your living off of. You're supposed to be this champion of these women. And all these courts took on the whole Chicago Police Department over these women. But here in Alaska, you're just going to boot them out, you know? So she's completely contradictory. It's so weird.
She is. It's really hard to figure her out. And you know what, you know, the fact that she's always reinventing herself makes her harder to study. But so then she gets in a big fight with the government. So now is this Canada or Alaska? I'm not sure. I can't remember.
It's Canada. Yeah. She's in Canada.
And so they get in, start butting heads. And is that why she ultimately ends up leaving Alaska and coming to Florida, because of the legal activities?
Yeah, I would definitely say that would probably be the second time she fled for her life.
Okay.
The first time was Chicago. She actually went up against the gambling in Chicago in like 1896 or something, like 1898.
Yeah.
And you go against the gamblers in Chicago at that time frame, that's all, you know, illegal mob activity. So she flees Chicago, ends up in Canada, out of the country, safe and sound. But then she causes this big, huge stir up there in Dawson City with the officials. A lot of it's over financial creditors. The medical board, this is how you really know that she actually was a licensed physician. Because in many instances, she goes against, you know, has to prove that she is. In Canada, one of the big problems with Luella and the government there came to where the medical licenses, the Canadian officials wanted the doctors to take like a state licensed course, but out there in the Klondike, nobody could get to a licensing course. So you'd have to go all the way into the city to get the course taken, and people are dying out there. So Luella, once again, champion of the people, you know, goes up against the government, and the papers are extremely friendly to her. I mean, the papers love her. The papers, when you look at the articles, are really on her side. So it makes you wonder, you know, if her cause wasn't for real. But then on the other hand, she kind of shoots herself in the foot, gets a little crazy. Next thing
which
you know,
is a theme with her, more than a little crazy at some place. So she ends up. So here's the thing that I've heard before, and I always wonder it's true. Did she really have a diamond in her front tooth?
Nobody can prove that. Down at the research library, and the guys down there are great. Charles Tingsley is amazing. Him and Bob run that place. It's amazing. And if you spend a couple hours in there, they'll pull all the files. When you get the links, you send them the links. They pull all the files for you. It's all set up when you get there. And the only time that diamond in the tooth is ever mentioned in anything I read, and I went through probably 20 years of court documents and letters, and the only time is a local lady in the 60s, I believe, had written a letter, and she mentions Luella Day McConnell and Ed McConnell showing up at the Leitner Museum of the hotel now, the Leitner, the Alcazar Hotel. Mm-hmm. And so they're there and they're listening to the music, and the lady is trying to get a glimpse of this diamond in this beautiful woman's tooth. Everybody's trying to make her smile so they can see if the diamond in the tooth is for real. And nobody can prove the diamond in the tooth. The lady said that wrote the letter that she had not seen it herself. And all my mentions, you know, before the 20th century, I don't see anything else about it, really. I really don't. And then when I found Diamond Lil, you know, she actually was a bordello owner, a dance hall girl. She lived to be 92.
So pretty this popular. Is a diamond, different Diamond Lil than our Luella, who also went by Diamond Lil.
Right. Well, people say she did. I personally don't believe that she would have. I don't know.
Can I ask an insensitive question?
Oh, sure.
Is she buried somewhere?
Oh, that's a whole other story.
Oh, that's a whole other story.
I mean, wouldn't we be able to dig her up?
Well, We won't get up with the Ocala Cemetery Director.
Okay.
I actually have her death certificate. I have the death certificate signed by Ed McConnell, signed by the funeral parlor in Ocala. I contacted the funeral parlor that supposedly handled her funeral twice personally. The first time I was told their records didn't go back that far. The second time, I believe they told me they'd get back with me, but they couldn't help me. So I ended up calling another cemetery, like the cemetery that she supposedly was buried at. And they connected me with the Ocala Cemetery Director. And so I call him, and I went and looked, I walked the cemetery looking for her. You know, I do headstone cleaning and stuff. So I went out there to find the headstone, and because there was no find a grave on her either. And that is so strange. I mean, she's such a popular woman. So anyway, so the director was a great guy, and the Ocala, he's great. He's been in that office for like 40 years. And he said to me that if there were no records of the actual, he had no actual record in his office. She died in 1927. That's not, you know, for historical purposes, that's not that long ago.
No.
And so, yeah, for the funeral part of telling me they had no records, I was like, you kidding? So I had told him, and he said, no, he said the only way the funeral parlor, people like to cut costs back in the day. And if Ed decided to have a funeral and the parlor was on board and they maybe pocketed the permit money and just had the funeral, they would bury her out there. If the tombstone is gone now because of vandalism, we may never find her. And I said, well, that's kind of odd. You guys just, you know, I mean, what if.
How do you lose a body?
Well, yeah, I mean, the other thing yeah. that's odd, she died near Island Grove, you know, which is near Ocala, but she had no connections yep. to Ocala. She lived in St. Augustine. She was spending a lot of time in Jacksonville, right?
Oh, yeah, lots of time.
I don't.
Yeah,
you know they had they had undertakers by then who could embalm the bodies by 27, I think. So why would she even be buried in Ocala? Makes no sense. But let's go.
Well,
she supposedly
died on site, but then they kept her in a locker there. They kept her in the hospital for like a week and a half.
Oh, so weird. But let's we leapt ahead. So one of the stories I heard, which I know after reading your book, I don't think it's true, is that she paid for the property of the Fountain of Youth with diamonds, which makes no sense, especially now, since you think that it's possible that she perhaps had the owner of the property meet with foul play. You kind of raised that possibility.
There's a good possibility of that. You know, she actually went to Cuba, and I have a copy of the receipt. I have copies of all the records, you know, from the Historical Society. So I have a copy of the receipt signed. It's got a little wine stain on it there from the Grand Plaza Hotel, where it's like a napkin, like a memo, where they wrote it out, signed it up for $75. And that was the money that Mr. Williams owed on the property. So they were basically paying off his property, and that was going to be counted as the deposit for whatever monies they were going to pay in the future. But Mr. Williams was there for health reasons. He was old. Luella was considered a nurse. She called herself a nurse at that time, and she became his personal nurse. And when they came back to St. Augustine, you know, not long after, one of the groundskeepers there had actually said that, you know, they said they had adopted Mr. Williams, and then he was gone in like 6 months. It was like 6 to 9 months later, he was gone. And then there's all this controversy. Now, what's interesting is the family that arrives once they realize Luella's got the property. Here comes all these nieces and nephews, but these were not immediate family. These people came from all over. And I noticed, you know, and I thought it was important to note that, you know, nobody gave Mr. Williams a decent funeral. I can't find where he's buried at all. And he supposedly was a United States senator at one point. So, you know, it's odd. I mean, all these people jockeying for his property and stuff and all this controversy and no headstone, no nice place to be buried. So that was odd.
You know. Yeah, it's there's so many weird things in her story. And so the other one that I, you know, in my book, Floor is Healing Waters, there's a guy who's German, who started a sanitarium in a little town called Tangerine. And supposedly he, during World War II, erected an antenna and was radioing German U-boats. And not long after that, his sanitarium got burned down. And then I came across this story of Luella, and something similar happened.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She spent jail time for that.
This was World War I, right?
Yeah. 1917, I believe, from 1917 to 1918, she was in prison, in jail in St. Johns County. Over the antenna. Now, I also think that was a setup.
Yeah, it seems
like
too weird.
I like that you mentioned the German connection because, you know, when you get into the book, there's this, I couldn't believe the connection I found with these guys. The one guy, Hermann Booze, was actually being tried for swindling ladies down in Tampa over pecan farms. He was actually in the process of swindling them out of property. He was in court up in Boston over that. At the same time, he gets involved with Luella over her property. Now, when you look at Booz's background, though, he's real big into German. He's a gym teacher at one point. He's going back and forth to Germany. There's some real odd connections there, along with this Ringgold guy that also gets involved with the first sale of the property in 1915 when she tried to sell it as a place for German immigrants to live. And the city of St. Augustine went nuts, and so she gave it away. But there's two really big German connections there. Now, Booz and the other guy, Fred Hall, they're living on the property in 1917. Fred Hall had his whole family there. And so they erect this antenna, you know, in the mansion. And next thing you know, here comes Sheriff Sabate, who's not real good friends with Luella anyway, and Fred Hall, and they're arresting Luella for spy.
It seems so strange to me because they were trying to drag her into court. Basically, her whole life she was in court, you know, and it's this one very weird case that's probably something she didn't actually do. I think there's probably a lot of things she did in her life that she was guilty of. But this seems so unlikely. And then they get her and she actually does time for this. Yeah. So the other thing that struck me was, and I had read a little bit about this, because obviously St. Augustine Society did not like Luella.
It didn't seem to be, no. She right off the bat seemed to have a feud with the lady at the Historical Society. So
yeah. And didn't you write that she would rant and rave and have all these crazy conspiracy theories constantly.
Absolutely. Yeah. When I came across these, you know, you find little tidbits where people are kind of gossiping about Luella and letters and whatnot. And she would print up flyers and go down. Now all the guys at the Alcazar Club, you know, it's Zareta Club. Now that was a gambling spot for men, like a gentleman's club. Mm-hmm. And she would, and her friends, her Women's Alliance, they'd go down and hand out flyers and anti-gambling, anti-drinking. They were extorting women. They had plots against women. These guys in there were trying to kill all the ladies that were talking, you know, independent women. You know, and I actually like that this went there because, you know, people joke. We joke now on Luella. But when you look at today, I mean, a lot of those outspoken women from her time frame were offed. I mean, honestly, if you look at it, a lot of them aren't conspiracies. They just disappear. They die. You know, most of them had their husband's last name, so you never even really knew who these women were. Yeah, she might have been onto something. You know, 20, 30, 100 years into the future. I mean, Luella's stuff really kind of doesn't look so nutty. I mean, especially today.
Well, I mean, there's definitely that thing where that, you know, they would call women hysterical, you know, and they would imprison them because they had hysteria, you know, which
Absolutely.
Was kind of this catch-all thing for an uppity woman.
Yeah.
So
and
there's that. But I also, I don't find it hard to believe that Luella suffered from some kind of mental illness because she's just so elusive to try and figure out. And then the whole thing about Kathy, you know, Napoleon Murat, the guy who was a big part of Tallahassee and St. Augustine history, supposedly descendant from Napoleon. She took on the name Murat at one point. So that's another name you have to look up when you're a researcher, is Luella Murat something or other.
It is. Now, the best thing about that little moment, though, sometimes I almost think that might have been a hint from Luella to look deeper. I mean, I constantly run across things to continue on. There may be a Luella, too. I mean, you never know. But that Lionella, you know, she called herself Lionella de Murat.
I forgot about that. Yes.
Yeah,
she changed her first name, too.
Yeah. I'm like, where did she come up with Lionella? Like, no time in my whole life in St. Augustine have I ever heard that. So I looked up, I just Googled it, and nothing comes up except for this French syndicate from the 1800s in Canada. And I'm like, oh, wow. So then I get into that, the court records from where she sold it out from under the debtors. The Lionella du Syndicate is who bought her out and got her
out. Oh, the hotel. Interesting.
So she names herself basically after the syndicate that bailed her out of Canada. And the Murat part, you know, she was trying to sell that Napoleon collection with her property for double the money.
Oh.
And if it was an actual family heirlooms, it's worth more. You know, I mean, I think it was just a scam for that one. And yeah, I think that was one of her little things. She had a lot, but she had mental health issues. She herself, now, whether she was trying to run from the creditor and she was hiding from her court trials, but she put herself in Worley Sanitarium for a week at one point. It was mentioned in the letters. She was saying that these guys were driving her crazy. She had to spend a week in the sanitarium.
Where was this?
Now, Worley Sanitarium used to be where Browdy's liquor store is now.
Oh, in St. Augustine.
Yeah, Dr. Samuel Worley. He had a sanitarium there right outside where Browdy's is now, and it was her time period. So I would just assume that would be the place she was at. But she had mentioned in her letters that she was in there for like a week.
So is it true that the Frasers own some of her letters that are in her original voice?
Not that I know of. From what I heard from Mr. Tingsley, they have everything there.
Who?
Research
Well, somebody, there's a guy who wrote, was involved with, he's a reenactor guy, and he did self-publish some little thin books. And he told me at an event that he got to read the letters that the Frasers had at the Fountain of Youth that were, you know, written by her. Because I've never obviously you have, anything that's in her voice.
That sounds like Dr. Roger Smith.
Oh, maybe. Oh, yeah. Ed Flagler?
Yeah, that sounds exactly like Roger. But yeah, and he probably did, and it may have even been the same. You know, we actually talked, and I stupidly did not ask him. I've kicked myself for that a million times, but I could have been the same ones I read that are at the research library.
Oh, so you've read her writing. So when in her writing, do you get a sense of her, or is she still just, you know, it seems like every time I try to figure out who she is as a person, it's just like, she kind of disappears. Like you can't.
Yeah. Yeah. She's hard to grab. Now her writing, one of the main things I recall stands out a lot, and it was a point that led to me, you know, assuming that maybe her death was just an accident. She had mentioned in her writing, you can see her handwriting is really bad, and she apologizes for it. And in the same letter, and she's writing these letters to the court, like she can't come into the courthouse today to the proceedings. You know, please excuse her from court. That's what these letters are. And they're being written to the court with excuses as to why she can't show up to the court. And the one time, you know, she was in the hospital. The next time was her handwriting, her hand was broken in a prior car accident. And she's explaining it. And you really can see that her handwriting is changing. You know, whether it's because of the broken wrist or whether she's going down the rabbit hole more and more. It's kind of hard to tell, but you can actually see her handwriting changing in these letters. The longer she fights the court, the harder it gets for her. the more stressful it becomes. And you can see her moments of frustration. And it had to have been horrible because from what I could tell, the two men were trying to scam her. I mean, they actually were. They really were. And she was fighting and she won on numerous occasions. But her actual letters, when it comes to her emotional state and who she really is, does it come out in the letters? Not really. She's not real personal at all. You know, it's funny because when she dies, she says, if I have anybody come forth for my property, give them $5. She said, you know, she says she has no heirs. And if anybody comes forward, give them $5 and tell them I'm gone or whatever, you know. So
I could use $5.
Yeah. I mean,
is that still an option? Is that still something I could do?
Hey, we have to find the McConnells. I think Ed would be the one to take care of that business.
Brandy, this is fascinating, and I don't want to discount your book at all, but I kind of, you know, we don't have a lot of time left. I want to know more about you. You said you work at the Fountain.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the story, but they need to buy the cow if they want the milk. You hear that, listeners? You got to buy Brandy's milk. So we're going to talk about you. What do you do at the Fountain of Youth, first of all?
I am just a tour guide. I'm a tour guide there. Actually, you know, I'm a St. Augustine native, and I was born and bred there. I was born in Orlando, but I was raised in St. Augustine. My family goes back to the French Huguenots. And my Aunt Mimi used to weave palm hats at the Spanish Quarter in the 1980s. We've kind of always had like a connection to the historic, you know, area of downtown. They were Menorcan. My Aunt Mimi was a Menorcan woman. So there's always been this connection to downtown. And I always just go back there. I mean, my dad was Navy. He was military. So in 1989, we actually went up to Norfolk, Virginia, which was hilarious when I introduced myself from the oldest city in the United States.
they didn't like that. Virginia.
Yeah, up in Virginia, they have they're a little sore about that. But and in 99, I moved back home, and I started working for Ghosts and Gravestones in 2016. I did security and stuff like that. And then I went back home to the tour business. So I was on the trolley in 2016, and then I managed Ripley's gift shop for like 3 years. And then I found my way to the Fountain of Youth, and it was a place that, you know, I played there when I was a kid. My mom and grandmother had an antique shop on San Marco, and when we get to town, they'd turn us loose, my cousins and myself, and we'd just play, you know, the fort, and because, you know, you're right there. And then right down the way is Nombre de Dios, and then you've got the Fountain of Youth. So we just kind of had free reign of St. Augustine in the 80s as kids. And I used to play out there all the time. For some reason, I just decided to answer that ad that they had. And I absolutely love it out there. But, you know, I do other things. I'm an artist and I'm a writer. And so you always have to have a influx of funds. So they do that for me. It's my job. And, you know, and I love to write. Like, I've already got another one that I hopefully will have published next week. And it's a do-it-yourself tour guide. And I paint. I run my website and my store. But, yeah, the Fountain of Youth is an amazing place. But St. Augustine,
drink the water?
I've been drinking the water since I was a kid. You know,
Not dead yet. So it must be true.
No. And as I tell people on the regular, and this is a true story, I do like the truth. I've never had a broken bone, knock on wood. And my mother never had a broken bone, and neither had my grandmother. And so I do attribute that to the calcium in the Florida water. I grew up on Florida well water, and hey, I mean, you know, that calcium, it works, you know, where it's good for you.
I tell people, everybody moved, because I grew up in Florida too, Brandy, and everybody moves to Florida and like, oh, the water tastes funny. And then they go buy water, and now vitamin water is so big. So I always tell people, look, what you're tasting is calcium and magnesium, and you're paying to get, what do doctors tell people to drink or to take supplements? You know, it's the original vitamin water. It's fantastic.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so I'm with you. Yeah, drink more Florida water.
Absolutely.
That's today's t-shirt. Drink more Florida water.
That is, drink more Florida water.
You know, but make sure it's clean, you know. We have some clean. You got to make sure. Don't go drink out of the St. John's River, y'all.
A lot of people ask me, like, what can you drink out of a spring? Like, name a spring I can go drink out of. I'm like, none of them. Don't drink out of any of our springs anymore.
There's a way to do it, though. You can drink out of a Florida spring. I'm saying, now don't. No, I have no scientific research to back this up.
Okay.
This is just me being a Floridian.
Okay, let's hear it.
But if, you know, your spring water at 72 degrees is coming out of the ground right there at the boil.
Right.
Now, if you don't mind the sand, you know, you take, you just like if you were a native, you know, you take your conch shell or your clay pot and you go right down to the boil and you'd fill up where that water is coming directly out of the rock, out of the sand. And that's going to be the cleanest water. You've got a constant flow, you know, it's not stagnant. I get kids, school kids ask me, you know, about still water. And I'm like, no, don't ever drink the still water.
Yeah.
If that water is not moving, it's not drinkable. And you want it cold. So right there at the spring boil, you know, this is a disclaimer on this. If you go do this and something happens, do not blame me.
Or us.
But yeah.
Or us. Yes.
Yeah. But I would say if I was going to do it, I would do it right there. There's a place in Orange Spring where you just walk across the ditch and open up the tap and they're getting it right out of the ground, you know, so no filters, nothing. You can just fill up gallon jugs.
Yeah, there used to be a lot of more artesian wells, and they're capping them left and right. There's been places around here in Orlando that they've capped. I think I know maybe one in Seminole County that may still be uncapped. I don't know. So the water at the Fountain of Youth, is that just coming straight from a well, or is it just piped in regular water?
Now that one, I don't even know if I'm allowed to touch.
don't say anything to get in trouble. Okay, don't want to get you in trouble.
Now what we say, you know, we just tell the truth. I mean, we do pump it from the planetarium there. And if you look, you know, you've been there a couple times, so you see that build, the banner up there is from 2400 BC. And the archaeologist Kathleen Deegan is the one who actually has done like the archaeological stuff on the park. She was with UNF. And so that spring was archaeologically, the geography was mapped out to 2400 BC, like 3000 years ago. And so the story really starts in 3000 BC with the native people at that spring, you know, using it for their water source. And then, you know, later on, by the time Ponce de Leon arrives, it's basically just a mud puddle. And then by the time Pedro Menendez arrives, he's got to drop a well and use the Tinaones and whatnot. So it's graduated over time. But according to the, you know, UNF research, there was a spring there like 3,000 years ago. And that's where the story starts. But the story at the park really is more about the history.
Yeah, I think, well, what I noticed is they have really shifted to telling the story more of Pedro Menendez and the Timucuans, which,
yeah, because you know, we're almost 200 years old. And as times change and as more comes out, you know, things have to change. Back when the Fountain of Youth was a big story, and I kind of go over this in the book a little bit. There were a lot of reasons to get people down here to Florida. You know, they were real estate and health reasons. A lot of people were sick and were looking for miracles down here. But nowadays the history is way more important.
Yeah.
So especially that since more and more comes out, you know, every time you have an archaeological dig, every time you got to put up a new building or something, more comes out, and it's a good, you know, it's good for our history, I believe, as a nation to know, you know, the actual starts of things.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So
I think that's a hugely important site. And the fact that the Frasers have been good stewards of that and not let it become condos is kind of a miracle in a way.
Absolutely.
Just easily could have become another property. And you can see how kind of the city has encroached around it. It's still the street that it's on is still one of the prettiest streets anywhere. You know, that.
Oh yeah.
Street
and you know, that street was donated to St. Augustine by Luella and Ed.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, they donated the property that that street is on. And that street used to run. Nombre de Dios wasn't built till the 60s. So Magnolia Avenue actually used to go straight through Nombre de Dios, the property that's Nombre de Dios now.
Mm-hmm.
So Magnolia used to go straight through almost to Ripley's, to Shenandoah Avenue.
Interesting.
That whole, yeah, that whole area was a big neighborhood throughout the early 1900s. And so it was a big deal for them to be out there. That's why I wrote the book. I hate to see them reduced to, yeah, you know, disappearing into St. Augustine history when they had so much to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And they do a good job taking care of that out there at the fountain too. I do love the place.
Yeah.
No, I think everybody should definitely find out more about these unsung. I'm not, that word sounds wrong. Unsung. Sorry.
Yeah.
Heroes in Florida. I mean, if you think about it, she really was an unsung. I don't want to say a hero, but I mean, the
she's not a hero.
Hero, but these unsung characters.
She's got some dirt in her past.
Yep.
But I would say that for a certain group of ladies, now I do have to speak up on this one, because for a certain group of ladies, Luella very well could have been a hero.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. In the beginning of the book, I write, you know, this book is for, you know, the disenfranchised women, the women with no voice, because back in those days, say your husband was beating you every night, you had no place to go. Luella would provide you a place to go. And if he chased you out there, she would have shot him.
And then, so, you know, I would say she's a dubious character who did some heroic acts.
Yeah.
As well as some perhaps unsavory acts. I think because I think keep thinking her life is so big that you could easily make a movie or a miniseries that maybe you'd find something in her childhood that just was really, really bad that kind of shaped her to be such an odd character, but also shaped her to be a champion of the downtrodden women of the society. You know, like maybe a man did something really bad to her. And, you know, she decided to become an advocate for women who had no voice during that time.
It's possible. I'm trying to think if I'm correct, you know, because Luella, the research, you know, I chose the best candidate that I found for my research from her childhood up.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of did try to paint that, you know, that's why I call it the life and times of what would have caused her to become this way. Now it looks like she was from a pretty well-off family, and going through her, I think maybe she would have encountered it with the women who came to her for her services. So like in Fort Wayne, Indiana, if she had a lady come to her that was beaten up or, you know, raped or something like that, and for her to be in her early 20s and to first encounter that, that might have really affected her, maybe carved her out a little bit. I don't know if something actually happened to her.
Yeah, who knows?
You know, with her personality, I don't know. You know, she was a fighter, man.
See, I think that's a certainty. I agree.
I mean, I think
the guy with a piece of board in the Yukon.
I think what we need to remember too, Rick, as we look at this and you say maybe not a hero, I would say she was an unusual hero, because if you never would see this. I know you know it intellectually, but think about women and how they were able to have agency at this point in our history. But these women who chose to work as agents of comfort for men, let's call them that. They were taking back their life and they were living outside the law and they couldn't go to a regular doctor, and she chose to take care of them. I mean, I think there's something very powerful in that, almost witchy or covetous. I don't know how else to say that. So I'm going to go with hero. I'm going to go out on a limb and say hero.
I mean, it really is a stand against the entire... Luella was never quiet about the society she lived in and a woman's place in it. She hated it. She hated that she never had a voice. She hated that she had to resort to scams and schemery to get her life together. The whole purchase of the Fountain of Youth property had to go through Ed McConnell's sister. because at the time women couldn't own property. You know, when you look at all these court papers and all these documents, you got to go back to the thoughts. Wait a minute. Luella couldn't even legally own that property. It had to be in an uncle or a brother. And Ed McConnell ends up as the, you know, he's always the overhead owner of that property, which is why, you know, Walter Frazier ends up working with Ed McConnell in the end anyway. And so when you look at that, it's important to note that Luella was fighting a system that was against her the entire time. And any woman that was a soldier for her, with her, was welcome in. And, you know, and there were a lot more of these poor women. And I say poor, financially poor women. You have no land. You have no titles. You have nobody to stand up. You don't even have
a name. You have no rights.
Nothing. If you look in the directory, one of the things that shocked me the most researching Luella, and I have another one. It's a do-it-yourself tour called Scandalous Women. And that really kind of birthed Luella. But researching these women, some of these women don't even have a name. You look in the directories and they're Mrs. John Smith.
Yep.
Or Mrs. James Williams. And who knew even her first name? It astounded me. You could be lost in history. You could be the most powerful woman in your neighborhood and still be lost in history because you never had a name. And so when it comes to women like Luella, it may have been gangster, you know. I think it's kind of why we like, you know, these stories, Bonnie and Clyde stories and stuff like this, you know, because she was powerful and she did it all on her own.
So say there's a Luella movie. Who plays Luella?
Oh man, that's a hard one.
Demi Moore, but Demi Moore from 25 years ago.
So like G.I. Jane, Demi Moore.
G.I. Jane, Demi Moore. I see that.
Yes, because we got to have a sense of humor. Luella definitely had a sense of humor.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. That's interesting. I do see this as like so perfect for fiction because, I mean, honestly, you know, the stuff Jamie that happened in her life Curtis, seems fictional.
Probably. I'm Who? Thinking more Jamie Lee Curtis, probably. Mm. Yeah.
Jamie Lee Curtis, Freakier Friday, Jamie Lee Curtis, True Lies, Jamie Lee Curtis, horror movie. Which one?
Yeah, both. You know, you're working with a dual personality here. And we got to find out if she's actually Miss McCullough, because she could have gone on to live a whole nother life.
I know. Her. That's what I
that's
love
my
it.
Hopes and dreams, man. I'm telling you, that lady looks so much like
so
her.
So much like her. I found this
not
other Lyanna, this other thing that she pops up as a medium. And if you look at the ads, it looks just like her.
And their shtick at the end is searching for eternal life through psychology. So it's crazy. Now, the only thing I can't put, you know, Luella was constantly mired in court battles.
Yeah.
Like everywhere she went, she had a court battle. This woman does not. So it's almost like the good and evil. I'm reading this lady's loved by her family. She's had a great funeral. Everybody loved her. She's like the good. It's so strange because they're so parallel.
I'm getting crazy now. Like, what if they were twins separated at birth and they just, you know, have these different lives?
It's
I don't
odd
know.
You should say that.
I
should say that because I found an article where she actually did a show. This is Miss the Hattie lady. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
She actually did a show with her sister. Her sister was a doctor as well. And I got a newspaper article where they did a presentation together. Who knows, man? I'm definitely going to be looking into it because I'm intrigued. You know, that's that rabbit hole thing.
Yeah. You know, I've never had any interest in fiction writing before, but her story, I think, may be best told through fiction.
Absolutely.
Know, because
through the newspaper articles and
yeah,
I mean, the articles speak for themselves. I mean, really, they do.
Well, it's been very fun to hear more
this
about
it. A lot
her.
Of fun. I'm trying to find a way to describe this in our show notes, and I keep typing things and deleting it. I'm like, no, because I really
to the wild world of Luella.
Welcome to the wild world. I wish every fountain of youth in Florida had this kind of backstory because there's about 5 million of them.
Well, I think there's other women like that, that we, in other stories and other characters that are out like that, but none quite like Luella.
None quite like Luella. Luella, now, you know, there were, not to the extent of Luella.
All right.
But when you look at some of the ladies in St. Augustine, Florida, that were really pioneering their way through life, Sarah Mathers and Rebecca Parete actually come to mind right off the bat. And they were two women who educated young Black people coming out of slavery. And they educated the Native people at the fort while they were being held there, prisoners. But those two women were always together, and they were never married. And, you know, there were lots of hometown rumors that they were lesbian relationships. They were buried side by side. And they carved their way, all in a time when women were not doing that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're setting up your next book.
Yeah. That one, well, Scandalous will be out. I just decided to turn these tours into do-it-yourself books, so that one will be out next. This one is the African American History Tour, actually, of St. Augustine. Do-it-yourself. You got a recording. You can scan QR code. So
cool.
Yeah, that'll be out next week, and that's for the common area of town, like the east side. You know what I mean? You got the bayfront. You got the fort. All that good stuff. And then the Scandalous Women Tour is going to be, that one takes some more work, because when you're talking a tour, speaking it, it's one thing, you know, when you've actually got it written down in a book, it's something else. So,
yeah.
So you got to make sure all your references are right and everything's good. So that one is going to take a little bit more work, because once again, these ladies are out there in history. You know, I've Ida Alice Flagler. You remember her story? Have you heard her?
We get all the Flagler wives. I get a little confused as to who is which. The second or the third one?
The second, who supposedly went crazy in Flagler College. Yeah.
That's a good story. Flagler. Very true.
It's a great story, but you know, the reality behind that, when I went in to research it for this game, you know, she actually couldn't have children. And Henry Flagler was determined she was going to have children, and it was driving her nuts. And she finally lost it all together over it. And when I found out her real story, I was like, oh my God, this poor woman. And here we tell these stories all day long, you know, and here the truth is something else, which is another reason why I wrote Miss Luella. So
cool.
Her truth is for real.
Thank you so much for writing it. And thank you for coming on the podcast. And
God, thank you for having me. It's been great.
And I want to apologize for the number of times in my head I have called you Belinda.
That is so funny, because, you know, who knows? My grandfather's from Chicago. So.
I'm like, yeah, Belinda Carlisle was on the podcast. Yes, this week. It was great.
Who knows, you know?
But no, so I apologize for that. But I would encourage all of our listeners to, you know, take a look. We have the show notes, and in that there's the link over there. We get a small percentage if you buy from that link, not a lot. So So take a look at the book. You know, it is independently published, correct? So
yeah, absolutely. I like to say, look, I am not the best writer. This could have been edited better. A lady called me out on it right on the reviews. I'm not, you know, I write because I have a reason. You know, at the time Luella came out was when abortion was becoming illegal again in quite a lot of places. And I felt her story was very relevant. You know, the ghost of Luella was whispering in my ear, you know, maybe some lady would like to hear my story. And so I may not be the best writer. I do apologize ahead of time. But I do write for a reason. I feel there's a reason. And that's why the next one's coming out. I have a very clear reason for that one, too. I'm not going to get into it here. But Luella's story, I felt, needed to be was very relevant at the time.
I agree. I agree.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I definitely think you should keep writing. And I
thank you. Oh, you guys rock.
We look forward to it. I have the book. I can't wait to read it. It's on Kindle, or else I'd ask you to sign it. So that's not going to work.
I work a lot. And like I said, I do apologize if I ever ran into you guys or met you or something out there. The past couple of weeks, I've been actually painting the statues in the back. I've been,
I probably saw your work when I was there a couple of weeks ago.
The first one up there by the barbecue, I actually just wheeled him out. So he's where they needed to be renovated a little bit. So that's where I've been for the last couple of weeks, but I'll be out there soon. Busy season's coming.
Well, thanks for being there. I look forward to meeting you.
Absolutely.
The next time I'm out there, I'll probably try and connect with you beforehand to make sure I do get to meet with you. But thank you so much.
Anybody they know, Brandy.
I'm like, where's Belinda Carlisle? I want to meet Belinda.
They would probably answer that. We joke out there because a lot of us have celebrity names. Like, my name's Brandy Carlisle. No affiliation with the singer, even though she's
that you know
music.
Of.
Yeah, that I know. Well, now that's Belinda. Now Brandy Carlisle. True. You never know. She's actually got my name. And then we have a Dan Brown, you know. So,
awesome. Oh, my God. You know, yeah. We're going to steal the Fountain of Youth. Sorry.
Yeah. We're like, hey, this is where we all hide out to make our money, you guys.
The celebrity takeover. All right. Well, hang out while we thank our paid listeners. I want to talk to you when we're done recording real quick, if you have a minute. But
yeah,
right absolutely. Now, it is the point in our show where I try desperately not to mispronounce the names of all the people who give us money every month. I sent out the postcards already this month. They're adorable. Please look for them. We want to thank our newest paid listener, Bill Grable. He joined about 2 weeks ago. Stephanie Hewley, Brad Sager, Brian Woodall, who very nicely sent me a picture of my books found in the wild on his Florida travels last week. Bet's Boys Adventure, Elise Smith, Carol Miller, Leslie Hallweg, Davita Breyer, author of Sinkhole, we love her, Natalie Zacharick, Angela Connolly, John Bowne, and Ryan Worthington, who is the Florida excursionist and just always a joy. He and I have a Submerged Stories Facebook page that you can find in the show notes if you want to check it out.
Was thinking we need to have Ryan on the show again to talk about what was going on with the campground.
Chaz. Yeah, they saved the Chaz. Oh, and we got to thank Sulcata Grove, who's not on our official subscriber list, but still counts because they sent us basically a year in advance of subscription money. So,
awesome.
Yes, thank you. Please, please, please pop on over to the website, floridaspectacular.buzzsprout.com. Support the website, buy Rick and I a coffee. If you support us at a higher level, we can even afford to put almond milk in the coffee, which is really exciting.
Someday
we can dream. And we'll see you next week on the Florida Spectacular. Thank you, Brandy. Thank you, Rick. Thank you, listeners.